Years ago. Okay. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group. Haven't found that sort of drink since January 25th, 1981. It is great to be here. I love this group. I love this group. I really do. I don't know everybody, but I know like 90% of people in this room for a long time. There's a lot of people. Like Fred's got, what do you got, 41 years?
Yeah, 34.
What? 34? I spit on 34. You know, but Anki, you've got 40. Anki, you have 40 years. You have 40 years.
Yeah, this one.
I see you're on the board here. Yeah. You're on the board here.
Yeah, the board meeting is a big.
But you're on the board also in the South Dixie room. I mean, how many rooms are you actually on the board on? I mean, how many rooms do you need attention, in order to feed your ego? And you have 40 years, and I see a bunch of my sponsors. I see David. Where's David? Obviously, the bar is closed early today. Dave is here. I haven't seen him in 17 years. How much time you have now? 35 years. 30. Wow. I like that. Yeah. Of undetected drinking. Unbelievable. He's here. Richard's sitting next to him. I know so many people here. It's unbelievable, you know. And
Richard
this
has
is,
like 26 years.
I don't even pay attention to people with 26 years. Please, you know, we're not going to do that. You know? There's such a concentration of sickness in this room. I was going to do, really, I was thinking of doing maybe my world famous chair on humility, but I never do it with a group this small, so we're going to change that deal. So I really am happy to be here. This is actually the fourth talk, fourth step, whatever. It's going to be something like that. It's going to be I'm going to throw out a few things, you know, and don't get mad at me if I sort of lose my train of thought, you know, because of the dementia thing and everything. So this meeting is actually to get you ready and prepared for like real AA meetings where people actually know what they're talking about. So I actually did this meeting already in my mind this morning. I can't tell you how fucking sensational it was. I it was so unbelievable. There was shit coming. I mean, I had an epiphany. I learned so much talking to myself. You know? I'm just laughing like, oh, I've never done that before, you know. Like,
I do it all the time.
You're doing this, having a conversation. You know, they told me I had a split personality. I said, I wish I could get it down to two. I'd be okay, you know. I had 18 personalities talking to each other. So, okay, so I do want to do a little bit on the fourth step. Do something a little bit different. I'm trying to do something a little bit different in this group. I usually don't do this. I'm actually trying to talk a little bit about the step I'm supposed to talk about. It's, you know, whatever. So I'm going to do a little bit of that. But, but here's the deal. I'm going to talk a little bit about the fourth step. Let me tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to tell you how to do the fourth step. I'm just not going to do that. I used to do that. This is how you do it. You know, you can, listen, I'll say just a little bit about that for new people. There's a chart. See, this is what happened to me. I spent like 6 or 7 months trying to figure out how to do the fourth step because I couldn't. I graduated with Department of the Learners in Mathematics. I was going to be a PhD in algebraic topology. I became a lawyer, and I couldn't figure out. You know, there were guys that like were janitors, and they had done the fourth step. I couldn't figure out how to do the fourth step. One day I got absolutely desperate, and some guy said, "Pick up a pen and a piece of paper and start writing." And I opened the book. I saw there was a chart, Mrs. whoever her name is, and I wrote down my wife. And I had a bunch of resentments, and I was done in 2 hours, not 16 weeks. I'm just not bright enough to have that many fucking resentments, you know what I mean? I'm just not, you know, I mean, maybe you have 2 million of them, whatever it is. You can start with me, Russell, you know, he said fuck during a meeting, whatever you want to say. Just remember, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And by the way, let me just tell you about the word fuck. Alcoholics don't hear it. Really solid. I happen to be a Christian guy. You may not believe that because I use the word, but really self-righteous people, solid people, they hear it all the time. But for alcoholics, it's just like a hyphen. You know what I mean? You know, new alcoholics say, "I like this guy." You know, I speak Alki because I think Alki. You know, I think in curse words. You know, and not all the time, but you know, some of the deals. So I there's no filter. There's no filter. There's none of this, you know, what do they think if I say this? What do they think I say that? There's none of this, you know. See, it's dangerous. What's that promise thing? You'll lose fear of people? You know, we all come in here, whether you know it or not. It says, unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety is precarious if true happiness will find none at all. And we think alcoholism has something to do with drinking. We already went through this, but once you get rid of the drinking, you know, you find out down the road that you're really crazy, a la second step, it'll restore you to sanity. And the reason the second step will restore you to sanity is because if you're an alcoholic, by the way, you're insane, you're crazy. So if you're here, you're nuts. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't matter whether you know you're nuts or not, because the big book says, you know, we're selfish and we're self-centered. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. We step onto people's toes. We do crazy things. What's the guy who wrote it? Manager said alcoholics are people out to destroy themselves. Absolutely crazy. All they do is think about, like my sponsor told me, what that means is we don't give a shit about anybody except ourselves. We're absolutely crazy. And that's the deal. And that's whether we're drinking or not drinking. That's before we start drinking, during the drinking, after the drinking. The drinking will stop, but the alcoholism goes on. It has to do with craziness and selfishness. And we must get rid of it. Most of it kills us. And that doesn't happen as soon as you put the plug in the jug. That keeps that what about me is going to go on for a long time. And so we have the second step where you actually at least come to believe that there may be a power that can restore you to sanity because you are insane. Some people hate the word insane. Some people like the word insane. Personally, I'm a guy who happens to like the word crazy. I used to go to second step meetings and people would say, I don't like people calling me insane. I said, I like crazy, you know. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Crazy. Once I found out I was crazy, I said, oh, thank God. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just crazy, you know. And I luxuriate in being crazy, you know. And not only that, then I found this group of people and they were as crazy as I. And listen, they weren't only as crazy as I was. They were crazy. You ready for this? In the exact same way. Listen, when you go your entire life and your old idea is nobody can ever understand me because I'm so screwed up, I'm so nuts, I don't even understand me, I wouldn't even know how to explain me, and then you go in the room and some guy's telling your story and three guys are saying, that's the way he's like reading my mind. You think, I'm home, you know what I mean? I can say anything in here, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I rape frogs, you know? I mean, what does it matter, you know? Five guys have been, I don't know, I feel bad. I fell in love with a zebra. Three guys go up to buy some coffee and say, yeah, they were in love with zebras too, you know? I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's a crazy place. So the deal is, I said something, I don't know what I said. Probably had nothing to do with the fourth step. But in any event, I'm not going to tell you how to do the fourth. So what happened was when I got ready to do the fourth, when I got ready, sometimes alcoholics will say things like, I'm not ready. That's code for I'm scared. Or they'll say things like, I'm working on it. That's code for leave me the fuck alone. You know, I ain't never going to do this thing. Get off my back, you know. And so when they're ready, it has nothing to do with not understanding. Maybe they don't understand, because one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is when you hear something, see something, or is told something you don't like, it confuses you, or you hate the person who tells you. And I know this. You see, one of the things that happened is, after being sober almost 39 years now, what happens is you start connecting dots. So when you do these things over and over and over again, you first come in, you're not sure what they are and all sorts of stuff, and they're really distinct and different, and you have to act differently. You have to willfully sort of act differently than you really feel. But after you do it for, you know, 1 year and 2 years and 3 years and 5 years and 10 years, 38 years, you're like living the steps. You don't even think I'm doing the 12th step, the third step, the 15th step, whatever, because it's just they're like in a giant freaking milkshake of steps, you know, and they're all mixed up. I mean, what am I doing? Am I doing the 12th step now, or am I doing the first step, or am I doing the third step, or am I? I mean, what am I doing? I mean, it's all to me. It's all together because it's integrated into my life. It's like, the guy say to Roland Hazard when he talks about the psychic change, the profound personality change? He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the driving and guiding force of these men's lives are pushed to one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which incorporate all the principles of the step so that you live. What does that 12 step say? You know, you do it, you do these things. What does 12 step say? I can't remember. You practice it. You don't even practice. You practice them, but you're just doing them. You're living them that way. You live sober, you know, emotionally sober. You know, that's the next frontier, emotional sobriety. You break away. You know, that's what the sixth and seventh step it is, the step that separates the men from the boys. You get serious about this stuff, you know. And so at that time, then it gets really scary because then the promises start happening to you, not on a once in a while basis, so you know they're there and you say, wow, you know, then it starts happening to you all the time. So you're almost living the promises. And so what happens, you really do lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. And so what happens is you're broke, but it doesn't bother you. So you never complain about it. You don't have a bad day because you're broke, because broke has nothing to do with how you feel. Or somebody doesn't like you or is pissed off at you, but it doesn't bother you because you're not so dependent on your who you are and what you are is dependent upon whether you like me or not. You don't necessarily assume that. And you lose fear of people. You lose fear of people and their judgments, which is sort of dangerous because then you can get up here and say all sorts of shit, you know. And you walk out the door, you don't worry about, you know, gee, I wonder what... that gal didn't laugh in the back row. She probably doesn't like me, you know. Who knows, you know. You know, this guy doesn't like me. He's probably not getting any. Who knows what the hell's going on? So I'm not going to tell you how to do the fourth step. The fourth step, this is what you do. When you get ready to talk to your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, get a sponsor. He'll tell you how to do it. Open up the book. There's a chart, you know. There's a chart, you know, like just like for idiots or for very bright people, there's a chart, you know what I mean? And there's four lists, a list of resentments, a list of faults, you know, regardless of your resentments, what did you do? List of fears, and then a list of stuff having to do with sex, which I know nothing about because I never had any. So well, that's not true. I had a lot of sex. And, but usually when I was having sex, I was scared and I was nervous and I was alone, so you know. I didn't come here to be humiliated, you know. Yeah, okay. Well, you don't know what it's like. Okay. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Where else could you do this shit? You can't really do this. You know, I'm a lawyer. You can't do this in court. I do try to do it in court. Sometimes I get away with it. You know what I mean? I figure if they're laughing, if the judge is laughing, it's very hard to sentence my client to life. You know what I mean? Just get them laughing. You know, they're having a good time. So I'm gonna actually say something. I'm gonna try to remember that great meeting I had in my mind this morning. You know. One of the things I do is I don't. There's consequences. There are consequences to being an alcoholic, because the dis-ease, the insanity that we have to get over, the craziness centers in my mind. It's part of me, drunk or sober. 38 years sober, I'm still insane in a sense. There's certain things that go on in me that I have to constantly be focused on God, so I can be rocking in the fourth dimension, experience much of heaven, and not have these things drag me down. But they're there. They're there in the back. I know they're there, because there's no such thing as getting away from them completely without them tugging at you like some sort of gravitational pull. I think I told you guys about that thing in public, so I was going to hit the guy with a rump roast and stuff like that. If I didn't, I'll tell you that story. But that's like 2 months ago. And I didn't hit her with a rump roast because I was spiritually fit. But I was thinking about it, you know, and because she looked at me funnier. Something like that. So, you know, there's always something. So, but what I really want to talk about, you know, I'm sort of like a one-trick pony here. And I've read the book so many times. I've lived this life so many times. I've lived this deal so many times that I see things now that I've never seen before. Now, these are all my opinions. I just want you to say that. I'm obligated to say that because it's AA, and the chief characteristic of alcoholics is they're defined. So for that guy in the back who's saying this guy's full of shit, I should be up there talking. He doesn't know anything. You know, you're right. You know, this is just my opinion. It doesn't necessarily apply to you, although I just want you to know that I'm actually 100% right, and you'll be okay as soon as you come around to my way of thinking. Now, but whatever, do your own thing. You know, that's what you do. So after 38 years, I see, you know, a lot of people here have been here for a long period of time. It doesn't even matter if you've been here for only a few months. If you've been here for like 3 months, you think completely differently than you thought 3 months ago. If you've been here for a year, you're thinking about things in your life and who you are different than they were a year ago. If you've been here 20 years, okay, the last thing you want to do is go back to the way you were thinking when you were 5 years. Some people think 5 years is pretty cool, you know? 5 years is great, you know what I mean? Except if you have 30 years, you say, oh my shit, God, I hope I don't have to go through that fucking 5 year thing again. You know? That was horrible, you know what I mean? You don't want to go back to 5 years, you remember that? Holy shit, you know? Oh man, people with 5 years don't know what they're missing. They have 35 years, it's just unbelievable. And if I'm good, if I'm, if I'm, blessed enough to get 45 years. I'll look back on 39 years. I'll say, man, that was shit. You know, I mean, I can't believe it. That was crazy. You know, I got to get through that thing. And so you see things differently. You know, it's like these optical illusions. You go to a carnival and you'll see this picture. You know, it'll be a picture of two people talking. And you'll look at the picture. People got around looking at the picture. And he says, do you see the eagle? I said, no, I don't see the eagle. I see two people talking. He says, no, there's an eagle there in the picture. I said, and you look at it, and you look at it, and you can't. You come back, and you look at it, and you say, you don't see any eagle. Then some 10-year-old kid comes up, and he says, oh, I see the eagle. And he says, what? I don't see. And then all of a sudden, somebody says, well, there's the beagle. And then all of a sudden, it changes, and you see the eagle. And then every time you see the picture, you see the eagle. But you didn't see, and that's one of the consequences of alcohol. You don't. My first wife said to me, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. She's a beautiful gal, great wife, nice house, beautiful kid. She said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. That's what she said. I was as sober as I am right now, physically. Mm-hmm. I got in my car, drove 3 blocks away, come to a light, I go, I wonder what the hell she meant by that. I was sincere. I had no idea what she was talking. I mean, if she had told me, you don't pay me enough attention, you know, that's not what she said. She said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I came home drunk that night. She kicked me out of the house. That was the end of the marriage. I was saying to myself, you know, she doesn't understand me. She's trying to change me. I was drinking before we ate them, blah, blah, blah. We got married too young. I told myself all this stuff that made sense to me because I'm a rationalizer. I told myself rational lies. I ultimately divorced her, left my wife, left my kid, you know, hurt her, tore her heart out and everything like that. But thinking I was perfectly okay and there was nothing wrong with me and I'm not selfish. After all, I'm paying my child support on time and all this sort of stuff. And then years later, I look at this story and it's a different story and I tell it a different way. It's about me being an asshole, being selfish, being a bum, an irresponsible bum, having no integrity, thinking I had integrity, hurting somebody that needed to be hurt because all I gave a shit about was myself because I was soft. I tell a different story. It's absolutely clear to me. It wasn't clear to me when I stopped drinking. I couldn't tell the story when I stopped drinking, but I got to tell you something. 5 years after I stopped drinking, I could tell the story about, you know, what I did wrong. And I can tell you, 30 years after I did it, 30 years after, I could see how evil it was. I can't even gloss it over as being, well, you know, I wasn't doing that well. How evil and how many people I hurt. So what I'm telling you is what I'm trying to express to you is, and what I'm going to express to you, and I don't know whether you're going to get it or not, is my feelings about this whole thing. After 38 years, you know, because I look at the big picture. I don't get lost in the weeds, you know. I mean, too close to the forest to see the trees or something like that. I'm looking at the big picture. And it's my belief based on my experience that this entire thing, everything about AA, is repeated 1,000 times in the big book, and it's all about developing a relationship with God, not a fuzzy God. Not all, he's out there somewhere, you know. I had a fuzzy God. When you come here, you can have, this is like a spiritual kindergarten. It's okay to have a fuzzy God. I give you permission to have a fuzzy God. You can have one of those, well, he's out there. Oh, it's love. It's all that sort of stuff. But the problem is, for me, that God didn't work when I had cancer. The fuzzy God didn't work when I had cancer. You know, what happened is, unlike you guys, I have like serious problems. And I couldn't rely on a fuzzy God that I couldn't hear, I couldn't see, feel, and touch. Or couldn't actually, and so I had to get something more concrete. As time went on, and as I started doing that 11th step, even then, when I didn't even realize I was doing it, I had to try to read books, get together with people that were constantly talking about God. I had to develop the idea of God and who he is and what he is, because the big book says once we give our lives to him and we're serious, and it's in the sixth step where you get serious about this shit, when you really become entirely ready to do that. When I got serious, started going to church, started going to Bible study, pretty good for a Jewish kid. Get trying to do that, become a deacon, and start getting going, all that stuff, and develop my conception of what God was, who he was, what he was, put a picture on him. Maybe he's not, but the bottom line is, for somebody like me, I gotta have something concrete. And as soon as I started having something concrete, maybe it has part of my craziness. Maybe it's the solution to my, and something I could see, feel, touch, listen to, read about, and everything like that. Then I could drive around, and he sits next to me in my car, And I talk to him all the time, and I pray to him all the time, praise him all the time. And he's as real to me as Jim Loretta right there. Oh, I'm sorry, I said your last. Well, screw it. You know what I mean? They all know you. They all know you. But anyway, he is as real to me. He is as real to me as you are. And when you are told you have cancer, you need that kind of God to have that kind of relationship. You know, and that's. That may sound like third step stuff or 11th step or whatever you want to say it, but the bottom line is that's what the book is all about. It's all about, these steps are all about introducing you to God, saying he's the only way. Let me tell you something. I know you think your mind's going to save you on this. It ain't going to happen. I know you think you're smart enough to think yourself out of this. It ain't going to happen, okay? What the book is about, and that's why they wrote Chapter Agnostics. A does take a stand on atheism and agnostic. You probably don't think it does because they have agnostic meanings and free thinkers. And all. It takes a stand. It says this sort of thinking must be abandoned. Mere code of morals, better philosophy. I know we do a lot of things. What is it? Good orderly direction. G-O-D. Good orderly direction. Okay, it's cool. You got 3 months, 4 months. You like to do that. You want to do the God thing. You just want to do good orderly direction. That's great. Ain't going to help you with cancer. Ain't going to help you when you're dying. And you're saying, where am I going to do? What's going to happen to me? And you say, well, good orderly direction ain't going to help you there. Okay, I'm just going to tell you, ain't going to work for you. Work with you for a few months or something like that. And the bottom line is, that sounds like God, but let me tell you what the big book says. The big book says, forget about me, it says, if a mere code of morals or a better, the Ten Commandments ain't going to work for you. Never been able to do them, you know. I haven't killed anybody yet, but I've lusted a lot of, you know, about another guy's wife, you know. But I mean, I just can't do Ten Commandments. You know, I'll tell you what, if I develop a concrete relationship with God to the extent I have a relationship with God, I pretty much act out the Ten Commandments. I'm pretty much doing pretty good, you know what I mean? But as soon as I start thinking about good orderly direction, I start thinking about all sorts of crazy stuff, you know, because I'm a rationalizer. I excuse myself. I say shit to myself like, I don't give a shit what people think about me, and all I do is worry what people think about me. You know, I just tell myself things, you know, that aren't true. I lie to myself because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered and I'm driven. I can't even help it. I don't even know I'm doing it by 100 forms of fear. Self-delusion. Delusion. You know what it is to be deluded? It means you're like deluded. Self-delusion. And this isn't complicated shit. Self-delusion. You know, and say, you know, I know you don't think so, but you know what the book says? It says, well, you usually don't think so. So, you know, if you don't think so, you're right there, you know? That's the deal. What do you think they're talking about? I don't think people actually read this shit. I think they read it. They don't even know what they're talking about. You say, well, I don't. You say, no, I don't believe what you're saying. I said, of course you don't believe it because you're nuts. You know what I mean? That's the disease. The disease is I'm telling you what the facts are, what they say in the book, and you're saying, well, I don't think that's true. Of course you don't think it's true. You don't want to think it's true because one of the consequences is when you're told the truth, you can't handle the truth. You know, after 38 years of having the shit pounded out of you and going it over and over again and finally wanting to be well, 38 years later, you see the fucking eagle and you say it's true. You know, hey, that's the deal. And you start talking like me. I'm a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and that's the deal. You know, first I'm arguing about it because I don't really want to change. I think it's just not the non-drinking thing. So, okay, let me get in sort of like, so here's the deal. Since for me, I'm sort of like a one-issue pony, because to me the God thing is the whole deal, and everything else is just tools. I want to somehow give you what I want to try to do here, and I don't know what I'm going to do, but we'll see, is I want to try to give you an overview of how the fourth step, has not so much to do with you understanding yourself. Not so much to do with you understanding yourself and who you are and the inner workings of your mind, and more to do with clearing away obstacles to God and the power of God. Okay, that's what I want to try to get, and if I can somehow get there. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going to throw out some shit. And this is not my stuff. I'm going to throw out some stuff in the big book and from different, you know, AA stuff that is true. And it's true. It's an AA. I'm going to throw out some AA truths. And I know it's AA truths because it's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It says one thing we can't agree on, you know. So if, you know, I'm going to throw out some stuff that I ultimately found. Because the longer I'm sober, the longer I realize that this book is divinely inspired and it's right. So here's the first thing I'm going to throw out to you, okay? Roland Hazard. We talked about him before. You know, you read these things in the book, and what happens when you first read them, they sort of mean something to you, but you can't really put it together because you haven't lived soberly for a while. And then maybe down the road, you read the Roland Hazard story, and you see it means something else. See, people might think the Roland Hazard story. I hope you all know who Roland Hazard was. He was the guy, the rich guy from the Northeast, who couldn't stop drinking. He was an alcoholic. He was a chronic alcoholic, so they sent him off to be with Dr. Young, greatest psychiatrist in the 1900s or whatever, you know, and he sat there with him for like a year or 6 months or something like that, and his funny farm or whatever it is, and he stopped drinking for like 3, 4, 5, 6 months, long time, and he was went through therapy and all sort of stuff and everything like that, and that's who Roland Young was, and Roland Hazard was. And a lot of people, when I read it first, I thought that had to do with drinking, because he went back to drinking, and he said, is there going to be any help, and, you know, and yeah, there is a phenomenon and everything like that. So I'm going to tell you the story again, because it's going to fit into this, because I see it differently now. Roland Hazard goes in for treatment. He can't stop drinking. He's an alcoholic. He's there for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. It doesn't matter whether it's that. It could be 28 days. Because the Roland Hazard story, I want you to understand something. The Roland Hazard story is repeated a million times every year by people who go to treatment. I want to tell you that the Roland Hazard story is repeated a million times by people that go through treatment. It's a story about every... There's no story in the big book. You may think that there are unique... There are no stories in the big book that aren't playing themselves out today in the lives of alcohol, in your life. Okay? Roland Hazard goes through treatment. He goes through therapy. He's brilliant. He's brilliant like I'm brilliant. He's brilliant like you're brilliant. You're a very smart guy, good family, you know, upper middle class and everything. And he finally comes out, and this is what he says after he's been sober 3, 4, 6 months. Now knowing the inner workings of my mind, knowledge, smart guy, drinking was impossible, okay? Now that I really understand, drinking was impossible, okay? The next line, nevertheless, he was drunk in a few weeks. Next line, nevertheless, he was drunk in a few weeks. More often than not, in treatment centers, people get out of treatment centers, and they may not do it the first day they're out of a treatment center. It may not happen for 30 years. I spoke to somebody last night who was a friend of mine who has 30 years, and she goes to one meeting a week. I probably go to like 10 meetings a week and Bible study and everything like that. I'm not comparing to it, but I said to her, because I've seen this too many times. I've seen people with 30 years drink. I've seen people with 10 years drink. I've seen people with 5 years drink. I don't even listen to their excuse. I don't even listen to them saying, you know, because to me, anytime they make an excuse, all I hear is, now that I know the inner workings of my mind, drinking is impossible. Now that I understand, I feel pretty good, drinking is impossible. I don't even hear the excuses anymore, because if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuseaholic. And she tells me, only go to one meeting a week, and I say, how can you go to one meeting a week? What about it? And I start giving her the shit, what about people that need to hear you? What about this? What about that? But of course, that doesn't go anywhere, because it's all about her, and you know, and you know, nobody ever asks her to sponsor people anyway, and you know, that kind of, she's already turning alcoholic and not even realizing it. She's thinking about herself and her feelings and how she's doing and everything. She doesn't even realize it. But that, it can happen in 5 years, it can happen in 10 years, but when they stop going to meetings, what's actually happening, they're not drinking when they stop going to meetings. As a matter of fact, when they stop going to meetings, they feel pretty good. They've got their shit together, you know what I mean? What they're doing is they're doing what Roland Hazard did. They're doing what Roland Hazard did after about, you know, 2 or 3 days or whatever it is. He's saying, now that I understand this thing and I feel good, drinking is impossible. And then it says, nevertheless, because this thing's cunning, baffling, powerful, and it has to do with something that's written in your soul, you know, and that you're dominated. Something's going to happen somewhere down the road where you're going to be far away from the meetings and the cancer's going to come or the husband's going to leave or whatever the hell it is, whatever worldly clamor you're addicted to comes along, whatever fudge is going on in your life that you're lusting after, something's going to happen and you're going to be too far away from the deal and you're going to drink or do something messy, okay? And he goes up to Dr. Young. Thank you. He goes up to Dr. Young and he says, is there any exception? And Dr. Young says this, and this is a closed meeting, right? Mm-hmm. You're all alcoholics, yes, right? Yeah. You want to listen to this. This, because this is about you. He says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never been able to help somebody with that state of mind exist. And no psychiatrist can help us over alcoholism even today. Now, don't get me wrong. I like psychiatrists. I know a bunch of them. I sponsor a bunch of them. You know what I mean? They're all crazy. And they can help you. I've been to psychiatrists. They can help you. But they just can't cure alcoholism. You understand what I'm saying? Now, if you go to a psychiatrist or a medical doctor, and let's say you're not going to meetings or you're not, whatever it is, you're bothered, and you start talking to them like you would talk to people in the meetings, this is what's bothering me, that's what, but they will try to help you. They'll give you a pill. They'll write you a script, trust me. And they'll say, why don't you take these, you know, three times a week. And what he's really, let me explain to you what he's really trying to help you. What he's really trying to say, what the doctor's trying to say as he gives you the pill, and you tell him how anxious you are, and you can't say, he's trying to say that he says, listen, I have no idea what the fuck is wrong with you. I have no clue. Well, why don't you suck on these for a while? So I can work on somebody who has a real problem, you know, because I have no idea what's going on. And the pharmaceutical companies that give me a lot of money for this say, why don't you suck on these things, you know? And, no. So it doesn't. So the doctor is honest. He says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic? He said, I've never known. It's never, I can't help you. He says, yeah, there's an exception here and there once in a while. Once in a blue moon, you know, they get well. It's a phenomena, which I think is a medical way of saying miracle. A phenomena is like, I have no idea how it works. It just happens. All of a sudden they change. They become different people. And this is how he describes it. It's a substantial psychic change. Here's how he describes the change. He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which is pretty much your whole personality. My sponsor used to say, why do you say the stuff you say? Why are you even sober? Why do you do that? I said, that's my personality. Russ, your personality is killing you. You know, I know how to stop drinking. How do you get rid of your personality, especially when you sort of like it, you know? And he said, ideas, emotions, attitudes, which are the guiding force of these men's lives. Of course, for us, it isn't even the guiding force. In the book, it says, we're driven. It's the driving force. When I left that wife for 5 years, who was a wonderful gal, and everything was fine, I said, this is what I said. I said, man, I'm finally free. Yeah. Free to go to the bar. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't realize is I was never free not to go to the bar. Right. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm getting divorced. She said, you come home one more time. I was never free not to get home before 4 o'clock in the morning. I was already in bondage and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm an alcoholic and I'm self-overrun riot and I have no idea what's going on. All I know is that I'm just compelled to do things and say shit and do whatever it is and you know, do that kind of stuff, you know? You know, people have sobriety here who go out and drink. They don't drink because of the, I know about the craving. You drink, you gotta have another one. They don't drink because of the, people who drink after they're 3 years sober, 5 years sober, you know, right before they drink, they're sober. Did you know that? Do you ever think about that? No, I'm serious. Right before somebody with 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years of time drinks, they're sober. They're not drinking because they're craving. They're drinking because they're crazy. Because they're insane. Because they want to die. Because they want to get off the fucking planet. Because they can't take it anymore. Because who knows? What does it matter? It's like insane. That's the disease I'm dealing with. I go to thousands of AA meetings over the period of years. Nobody's got a drinking problem. They're all nuts. You know what I mean? In the way we're nuts, you know, and that kind of thing. And so he says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the guiding force of these lives are shifted to one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. They're like dominated to act in a different way. And what happens in here is what we ultimately learn, this phenomenon. And then he starts talking about God. He starts talking to him about God, and that's what Roland Hansen talks about God. And then the rest of the book, the rest of the book takes up that theme and pushes God. Chapter Agnostic pushes God, and that's when you get all these statements. And I can name about three or four of them right off that, but there's a lot more. It says we're on a new basis, the basis of trust and relying upon God. We never apologize for God. God, there is or he isn't. Well, mere code of morals, better flight, ain't gonna help you. To get to this domination where you change and you're a completely different person. And you act, it ain't going to help you. It says, no human bad, it's going to help you. It says, that's why we wrote a book, we're going to talk about God. And then you know what it says right after that? It says, the hackles of our neck. You know, hackles, that's like when a cat goes, you know. It says, and that means we wrote a good, because we don't have power. We don't have the power to do that. And so we wrote a book where we're going to talk about God, and we know that's going to piss you off. But you know what it says? But this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. And what do you think happens when somebody like me comes in and spends a whole meeting talking about God? What do you think that happens? I'll tell you what happens. A whole bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, I don't want to hear this. I didn't come here to hear this shit. Yeah. How can I feel? But they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. But I understand why they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it because they're alcoholic and they're crazy. And so what they don't want to hear is the solution. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, people come up to me and say, why do you talk about this stuff? I says, you know, you're going to scare away newcomers. You're probably right, because newcomers don't want to hear it because they're really fucked up. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But let me ask you something. Where would I scare them to? I mean, where are they going? They're going to go out and they're going to drink. They're going to drink until things get really bad. They're going to come in here and then they're not going to mind it much. Mm-hmm. They're going to come with a different attitude. You know, the first 4 years of AA, you couldn't even go to a meeting until you got down on your knees. Couldn't get it, you know. So, you know, listen, so what do? Don't tell the solution. You might hurt somebody's feelings. You know, and that's what he says. He talks about God. And the rest of the book, it's all about, it says, when he says, but you'll be dead, we won't be able to hang him. He says, we don't know that. Only God can determine, and your real reliance has to be on him. He'll even show you how to create the fellowship of Craig. He'll show you who to hang around, who to listen to. See to what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come past you and countless others. It says once you're sincere and make a sincere decision on this, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he'll give you anything you need, everything you need, if you stay close to him and perform his work right. You know, I mean, that's all it says. It says the real problem, it talks about the selfishness. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. The entire book is about believing and having a faith in God and improving it over and over again to get to the point where he's so real to you that you want to spend every moment thinking about him, so you don't have to think about her. So you don't have to think about him. So you don't have to think about the car. So you don't have to think about the God. So you, the car. So you don't have to think about the money. So you don't have to think about the worldly clamors that Bill Wilson said that we're so addicted to. Once we get out of here and we stop with the booze, then you realize you're addicted to your checkbook. You're addicted to clothes. You're addicted to all everything. Ecclesiastes, vanity, vanity. Everything is vanity. You find out what... It's almost like you chase after it so much. You chase after it so much for so long, and you're so sure that if you only won the lottery, it would solve all. You're so sure if you only got the money and the guy would solve your problem, you hardly realize. Even at 50, 60, 70 years old, it never makes sense to you. You don't even realize that every time you've been screwed up and hurting and feeling sorry for yourself, it's always over this stuff. There ain't enough stuff. There ain't enough stuff to make you say to yourself, stop saying to yourself you're a piece of shit and you ought to kill yourself. You got $1 billion, you'll be in the shower, you'll still say you're a piece of shit, you're going to kill yourself. There ain't enough stuff to make you stop caring for yourself and caring other people. It don't matter. You don't even see that what the deal is, that God's got to be number one. You don't even read that part of the book where it says to be rocking the fourth dimension, experience much of heaven. It says, the great fact is this and nothing less, which I think means it's nothing less than this, where it says, our Creator, God, has become the central factor in our lives. We are absolutely certain that he lives in our hearts and minds, which indeed miraculous, he's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. That's what they say in the promises. He's doing for us what we can't. And so many people are trying to do this thing once over lightly without going crazy on the God thing, because they don't want people to look at them like they're funny. You know what I mean? Oh, he's a Jesus freak, or he's funny, or something like that, because they're more worried about what other people think about him than worrying about what God thinks about him, because God's okay, but he's sort of fuzzy, so he really doesn't have much to do with your life. Yeah, you know, I mean, as they're telling themselves, they don't care what other people think about him, but worrying about why they can't get better. He's not willing to really dive into the deep end of the pool. You know, that kind of deal. Bill Wilson, in page 100, as Bill sees it, has this great little quote that I sometimes talk about. It's called the Forgotten Mountain. And this is, I'll do the best I can, it'll probably be a paraphrase of it. He says, when I was a young child, he says, I learned something happened to me which had a lot to do with my, I'll do it off the top of my head, but thanks anyway, lots to do with my alcoholism. He said, I lived in a New England town in a city which was under the shadow of a mountain called Mount Aeolus. And he says, I used to stare at that mountain. I used to stare at that mountain and wonder about that mountain. It was so mysterious. And look at the mountain. And what would it be like to climb that mountain and be on that mountain? He said, but when I was 4 years old, my aunt, for my fourth birthday party, brought me a plate of fudge. A plate of fudge. He said, for the next 35 years, I chased after the fudge of life and quite forgot about the mountain. You know, it's easy to chase after the fudge of life, what you think is going to make, because it's in your face. It's all out there. That's what they celebrate. They don't talk about this stuff out there. It's in the movies. It's all over that stuff, you know, and get lost in the weeds there and forget about God or do a once-over lightly with God, like it talks about in the seventh step, where you can even have a belief in God, but it's barren because your life has nothing to do with God. As a matter of fact, you're really running away from the God thing, you know, that kind of thing. Seems even happening to me. Turn it off. So, you know, that means, so what does that have to do even with, so what? Now I can go on and give you example after example. Bill Wilson said the next frontier is emotional sobriety. So the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies is dependent upon anything but God. And the funny thing is what I learned, and you know, it's like, this is the strange thing about AA, and I think a lot of you guys know this. When it's explained to you like this, but you haven't experienced it yet, it may not make any sense. But you may just do the things your sponsor is telling you to do because maybe you want to get off your back. Maybe you don't want to drink, which is a good reason. Well, he says, if you don't do it, so you do it. As you do the thing over and over again, and you get closer and closer to God, and you develop a relationship with God, what happens is you start overcoming. I love the way Jesus said in his last line, he said, in this world you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. The Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. My sponsor used to talk about equanimity, and I had to look it up, even though I'm wordsmith, and equanimity is the ability and the capacity to be calm and at peace with yourself, even as shit is breaking up all around you. You know, to feel good about yourself no matter what the hell's going on. And that means you don't go to meetings to say, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. And I used to see some of these old times, I wondered what they had. And I thought they had billions of dollars in the bank and getting sex every day because you couldn't move them. They were like this. They couldn't move them. They probably had what I have, dementia. They couldn't move them, you know. They weren't paying attention or something. They were listening to other stuff. So with all that in mind, that maybe this has something to do with God. Or maybe it has something to do with a psychic change. Not because you're intelligent. Not because now you know the inner workings of your own mind, trying to constantly figure out how you can get better. But because you've actually done whatever you could do through these steps to remove any barrier between you and the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of God. Now I want to look at the fourth step again. And here's what the fourth step says. If you do this crazy thing we're asking you to do, if you're doing this crazy thing we ask you to do, which might not make any sense to you, saying, why should I do this shit? You know what I mean? Why am I making a list of people I resent and looking at my faults? And why am I doing all this thing? Oh, it's probably to make me smart like a psychiatrist. Well, if that's true, then how come you got a lot of psychiatrists in AA? It's probably made me brilliant, you know? And then you see this little line. It says, because if you do this stuff, if you don't do this stuff, because as an alcoholic, part of your craziness is you're going to get resentments and fears. And that's going to block out the sunshine of the Spirit. Never forget why you're doing the fourth step or the fifth step or the eighth step or the ninth step. You're not doing it to get smarter or to be wonderful or to be perfect or anything like that. You ain't never going to get there. You're doing there to improve your conscious contact with God and not have it block out the sunshine of the Spirit, because that's the only thing that's going to keep you sober. And by the way, just so to put an exclamation point on that, the reason why I know it's the only way is because there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. It doesn't say you have like 10% and he's got 90%. And I might point this out to you. You may have forgotten about this, but the first step says that you realize that you're powerless, that you have no power. There's nowhere in the steps that's saying, okay, now that you've done six steps, now you've got the power. And God doesn't have the power. What happens is, if you do this thing right, you can get more of the power you can, I forgot the word, I wish I could forget the word, you know, that you can sort of like take hold of the power. You can plug into the power, but it's his power. That's why you'll hear some people who are believers saying, they'll say things, I say these things, sober through the grace of God. I need to say sober through the grace of God, because if I don't say sober through the grace of God, I forget why I'm sober. I'll start thinking sober because I now understand the inner words of my own mind. And then one day I'll decide not to go to meetings because I feel good anyway. And, you know, and I've been doing a while. I'll start thinking stupid stuff. You with me? That's the whole point of the... All these steps are designed, you know, and they're right out of the Bible. They've been around for thousands of years. And in the first 4 years, I'm going to end it here. First 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous started in 1935. Big Book was written in 1939. Big Book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. In other words, you do what we did, you'll get what we got. That's what it said in 1939. Now, the one thing they weren't doing between 35 and 39 was reading the Big Book. You understand that, don't you? If you don't get that, I'll explain it to you afterwards, okay? But if you read Dr. Bob's Good Old Timers, they say the books that they found absolutely essential. Absolutely essential, which I don't know what, you know what essential means? Absolutely essential. Was 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. Now, I'm not going to go through all that, and I've studied all of them, and it's helped me out a lot. But one of the things it says in Sermon on the Mount, it says, if you have a problem, if you want to speak to God and have a relationship with God, and you have a problem with your brother, he says, you go fix the problem with your brother first. Then you can speak to me, because the problem with your brother is blocking out your relationship with me, i.e. steps 8 and 9. None of this stuff is new. Bill Wilson didn't invent this stuff. None of this stuff was invented. And it's all about him and blocking out the sunshine of the Spirit and blocking out that deal. You know, so in any event, that's all I got. Thank you very much. Thank you.